Well, there's another film that is really worth making the effort to go see, and that's a film, it's a documentary, a feature documentary called Ernie and Joe. And it's a story of two skilled law enforcement officers on the job as they negotiate one unpredictable 911 call at a time. And they work with the San Antonio, Texas Police Department Mental Health Unit. And their goal is to divert people away from jail and into a mental health treatment environment. And almost a buddy film, the way director Jennifer McShane directed it. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But Ernie Stevens, welcome. Welcome all the way from San Antonio, Texas, via all kinds of places, right?
Yes, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here today.
And this is your first time in the Pacific Northwest, right?
It is, and I was happy to get away. It was 102 degrees when I left San Antonio.
Well, you'll enjoy Port Townsend. Port Townsend has this wonderful, well, I don't, you're in shirt sleeves, so you're enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it immensely.
Well, Ernie and Joe is a pretty fascinating film, and Jennifer McShane and I had a chance to talk at length about it over a couple of weeks ago, and we pre-recorded some interviews that went on the air at KPTZ over the last week and a half. And unfortunately, Jennifer can't be here this week. She's got some family matters, I believe.
That's correct.
And so we're really glad that you were able to make it. And it sounds to me like both you and your partner, Joe, are sort of trying to spread the exposure as best you can, right?
Yeah, we are. You know, we've been to many places so far. You know, we've been to Aspen, we've been to Boston, Washington, D.C. It's been almost surreal to go to some of these film festivals. Each one has a different atmosphere about it, you know, different cultures in the town. And, you know, I've stayed in a little bubble in San Antonio my whole life, so this has really given me an opportunity to travel and really appreciate what this country has to offer.
You know, you and your partner have been together for quite some time, right?
We have. I've been on the police department in San Antonio now for a little bit over 24 years. He's been there about 13. We've been partners for about 7 now.
What was it like having your kind of day-to-day life and just your regular job that you do every day in a film suddenly?
Well, you know, we had some local exposure when we first started a mental health unit, and then the training that we did, that we provided to other police departments, was gaining some momentum. So we had some media exposure. We had some articles written by the local newspaper and some other newspapers. But when Jen came and said that she wanted to ride with us, that she was a filmmaker, and she didn't bring a camera with her. So I was like, what kind of filmmaker doesn't bring a camera with you, you know? But after the second day, it was very obvious that she felt like there was a story here. She said, this is not normal, what you and your partner are doing on a day-to-day basis from what nationally people think about police departments. And I want to get that out there. I want people to see it.
You know, she rode with you for a long, long time before she even brought a camera into the picture. And she said that that was very important. It was very important not only for her, but also for you too, as partners.
Yeah, you know, and I think the call that did it for her when she was down here without the camera, we made a call involving a gentleman that was feeling homicidal. He had feelings that he wanted to kill one of his roommates. And, you know, we talked to him, we de-escalated him, but it was obvious he was in a psychotic state and he needed further treatment. So we were taking him for treatment, and I offered him the front seat, and I told my partner, I'll sit in the back, you know, he wants to sit up front. And Jen looked at me because she was following us in a car, and she goes, why in the world would you offer him the front seat? I said, because he didn't want to sit in the back. You know, and it was simple to me, but for her, that was, you know, unexplainable. You know, what are you talking about? You know, why isn't he in handcuffs? I'm like, because he's sick. He's not a criminal. He's sick, you know, and I'm not going to put somebody that has diabetes in handcuffs, why would I do it for somebody that's mentally ill that's not posing a threat at the moment?
Well, it's changed the whole paradigm, hasn't it? Just the way law enforcement looks at folks that have mental health problems, and the whole idea of cops being trained to react to the word gun, as opposed to the term was hug a thug, I think, was what your trainees would probably, how they would approach the subject before you got through training them, and then they realized, and some of the cops that saw the results kind of changed their attitude about what this really meant, this connection.
Yeah, Chris, you know, a lot of the officers, they were told they were going to come. The chief mandated the training, and I heard remarks like, I'd rather retire, you know, than have to take this class. You know, this hug-a-thug class, like you said. But what we found was that the officers that were most resistant to the training were the ones that were directly affected by mental health issues. That meant that somebody in their family or somebody close to them had struggled with mental health, and they didn't have good results. So right away, if you don't have a good experience at a restaurant, I'll never go back there. I'll never eat there again, right? Same thing with an officer. You know, hey, I tried to get help. It didn't work. I'm done with it. But by the end of the week, they realized, hey, there is help. There is resources out there I didn't even know about. So I'm going to open my mind and kind of expand my resources available.
And is there a level of vulnerability that an officer needs to have to be able to kind of connect with people in this way, or that might be more difficult for them?
Yeah, you know, so originally the goal was to train 20% of the police department, and it had to be on a voluntary basis. And that way you were going to get the officers that wanted to take the training and they had that desire, you know, because I can't teach somebody how to care, you know, but I would hope that if you chose the profession of a police officer, that would be your desire, is to help. But, you know, when you join the police department at a very young age, you know, that is your goal. I want to help. I want to change the world. I want to make it a better, safer place. But then 5 years into their, you know, their career, you see their values change and their beliefs change, because now they've seen the worst of what society has to offer. So you're right. I mean, there's always going to be that struggle of, you know, is this training for everyone? Is it should be just voluntary? But the one thing I will say is that by making it mandatory in San Antonio, we were able to reach officers we would have never been able to reach before.
Hmm. Go ahead.
And I'm curious, you know, in today's climate around police in America, there's all this conversation about police brutality, about, you know, cops are bad. And what is it like to be a police officer in that climate, and to deal with that and kind of look at how you guys can do things differently?
Good question. And I think that really depends on the climate in which you're a police officer in, right? In San Antonio, we have a very good support system with our community. You know, I mean, you'll drive down the road and you'll see bumper stickers saying "We back the blue," you know, which is pretty unusual. But we have that support. Now, I have been to other cities and have taught this training where there is a divide between the community and the police department. And once that trust factor is broken, it is very, very difficult to try to reestablish. So it is really just city by city specific. There's no one, you know, nothing's 100%. So I think it really depends on the environment, the culture in which you're policing it.
Ernie, I remember you were talking in the film to a group of police in a training session, and one of the things that you said was that if the police think that the community or the mental health resources in the community are worthless, then you're not going to get anywhere. And you made the point that it's so critical to have this relationship with all of the support services and a communication with all of them, because when you're trying to assess where a person is going to go, you're going to need to know where to take them.
Yeah, you know, and what we realized very early on was that certain facilities were very good at providing certain services, but all these services were siloed within their, you know, their expertise. So really bringing everybody to the table and saying, hey, well, what are you good at? And what can you offer? what can we do as a community? Because we're all in this together. Mental illness doesn't have a face, it doesn't have a race, it doesn't have an age, it doesn't discriminate. It's in the, all of the communities. So once we are able to really gain the support of the local mental health authority, of the individual stakeholders, and say, hey, we want to be a team player, a partner, a spoke in this wheel, I think that we can make a difference in this town. Once the buy-in, you know, took effect, that's when we started seeing positive and effectual change.
The other thing that struck me, Ernie, we only have a couple of minutes left, but both of you worked in tandem. You two different people, you're partners, but you're two different people, and,
yes.
and you come from two different directions, actually.
Almost opposites.
Yeah. And it was interesting, the comments that you made about how if Joe's a veteran, he's a
Marine Corps,
combat veteran. And he has some PTSD issues and all the rest of that stuff, but he has that empathy. He has that ability to talk to somebody that happens to be in, you know, with that kind of a background. You, on the other hand, have a different background and you're more effective in different areas. And so when you come in for a 911 call, you both make this assessment about who's going to approach this person first.
We do, and that can always change.
Yeah.
You know, somebody can look at, I can be talking, all of a sudden, they don't want to deal with me anymore. Maybe I said something or I didn't look him in the eye when I was talking. All of a sudden, now Joe has to pick up that rapport. And I'll say this about Joe, and he would tell you if he were here too. He is very blessed by given the opportunity to tell his story. For the film, he became very vulnerable and very transparent about who he is. You know, this is as a young man, he suffered sexual abuse trauma, physical abuse trauma, and was a Marine Corps veteran. And his ability to see through people and really get to the core of the issue is uncanny. And I think you see that in the film. And, you know, anytime I even think about it, I get goosebumps because he's so good at what he does. Where I come from a little bit more stable background, and I really focus in on family relationships, on the children. And so we both have our different strengths, but combined, we did a pretty good job.
You sure did.
Was it difficult to kind of show some of that vulnerability in the film? What did you think of it when you finally saw it?
At first I thought, is that really how I sound? And man, I gained a lot of weight. But once the shock factor settled down, it's really what you see in the film is what you get. You see Joe, you see Ernie, you see our lives. There was no, hey, let's run that again. Let's run that back. Try saying it like none of that happened. You know, there was no retakes. I mean, this is a documentary. So, you know, she filmed over 300 hours worth of film and had to put 94 minutes together. So I would say exactly that, you know, what you see is what you get.
And she had a wonderful crew, not unobtrusive crew that were very sensitive to being able to not only collect the sounds, but also the images.
Yeah, you know, and for the police culture, boundaries are very important. So they did keep their boundaries. They spent a lot of hours in the back of police cars, and it was difficult for them, but they did an outstanding job.
Ernie Stevens, from Ernie and Joe, from the film Ernie and Joe. And this is going to be screened twice over the festival weekend. And the first screening is on Saturday at 9:30 at the American Legion. And there will be a panel.
Yes.
Which would be a very, very important panel because the Port Townsend Police Department has a program called the Navigator Program.
Yes.
And so it should be a really wonderful discussion after the film. So, and it will be shown again at 6 p.m. on Sunday at the Cotton Building. Ernie, thank you so much for stopping by. It's an important film, and thank you and bless both of you for helping to change the paradigm.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.